Hello and welcome to another edition of the Sport Kansas City Show on your home for SKC Soccer, Sports Radio 810 WHB. I am Nate Bucati, joined as always by the one and only El Jefe, Carter Augustine, fresh back from his trip from beautiful, sunny, picturesque, idyllic Houston, Texas. Those Carter, how are you, man?
Those are adjectives.
They are adjectives. Are they appropriate adjectives? How would you just? What adjectives would you use to describe Houston, Texas? In was it late May or early June?
June first. Sweaty is the first one to come to mind.
Sweaty's one.
Sweaty. Maybe stifling.
Oppressive.
Oppressively hot.
Have you ever seen the movie Planes, Trains, and Automobiles?
Yeah.
I think the grandmother at the end, when he keeps trying to say the air was sultry, sultry is what she said.
Sultry, yeah, that might.
The
that
air
might
is
fit.
Close.
The air was very close. Yeah. I'll say that. I don't know how those guys do it, to be honest, because I was sweating my you know what off out there in Houston for sure.
But the team did it. They were able to grind out a point against the Dynamo. I think that it was pretty clear. Soccer is one of those sports that can leave you with mixed emotions. If you had given Sporting Kansas City the opportunity before the game to sign up for a draw, maybe they would say, no, we wanted all 3 points. But I think considering third game in 7 days, losing Matt Beisler, losing Johnny Russell, all the other injuries that you're dealing with, some tired legs, a team that was 6-0-2 at home going into it, a 1-1 result might feel like a pretty darn good result going into it. But when you take that goal and you have the lead in the second half, you start thinking about 3 points. And I think it was clear when Peter talked to you after the game that he felt like that was certainly more than a possibility that they could have come away with 3 points.
Yeah, that's kind of how it felt like, right? When the guys were talking after the game, that's kind of how it felt that's what they were feeling, because they had taken the lead. And also, they had just defended so well throughout the game. The way that they conceded, I think, is what will frustrate them the most, because they had played so well defensively. I mean, mm-hmm. How good was Cecenovic especially? But I thought both fullbacks were dealing with two really tricky wingers, and wingers that are trying to get under your skin as well. And, I mean, Albert Ellis scores the goal, but I don't think he had much to do in that. I don't think he really showed his talents, because I think he was shackled pretty well by Sporting KC's defense.
I think that's actually a heck of a roundabout compliment for Ellis, by the way, which I'll go ahead and say. The real goal scorers in the world find a way, even when they're getting frustrated through the entire game. And you could tell that he was getting frustrated. He was upset. He started basically flat out fouling Seth on a consistent basis because he was so angry at the way Seth was bossing him in that game. But he found his one moment, and the ball came to him in a situation where Seth wasn't on him because of the way the ball had come in. And boy, that was a heck of a finish.
Yep.
And those great goal scorers, you might be able to silence them all game long, but all it takes sometimes is that one little opportunity, and he took it. So credit to him.
Credit to him. Good player.
Yeah.
And I mean, as we reported, he was about ready to get subbed off. Literally, Memo Rodriguez was on the touchline ready to come in for him. And I wonder if he maybe his ears were burning or something, and he's like, I'm going to stay in the game.
Off.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it came right to him. I mean, it was, and he pounced on it. It was a good technique on the finish. You're right, though. We have to credit Seth, because every time the two of them were matched up one-on-one, Seth won every single one of those battles through the course of that game, which is really impressive. And another guy that I wanted to give some credit to in this game, you and I have been, going through our preparation for this upcoming broadcast. Graham Smith, I think you mentioned that Peter Vermees singled him out earlier today. I like to go to a website, whoscored.com. They give some pretty good statistical breakdowns of different games around the world, and they have their own little player ranking system. I'm not suggesting that that's gospel or anything, but they had Graham Smith as their highest-rated Sporting Kansas City performer in the game, and he was 48 of 49 in pass attempts, or 47 of 48, whatever it was. He only had one incompletion the entire game. And you might say, well, look, center backs, a lot of times those are simple passes. We know with Peter Vermees that the ability to play out of the back is something that he really wants from his center backs. And that's something that Graham has been trying to work on improving in his early career. I thought he really showed himself well in the game on Saturday.
And as you said, Peter Vermees said today that it was his best game. And it was a shame that he had to go off. He was cramping pretty bad, and that speaks to the heat down there in Houston. And you could tell when he came to the sideline, it was like a rousing. The whole bench gets up to greet him, and you know, every guy when they come to the bench, you know, gets a nice, you know, pat on the back usually, and you know, good effort out there or whatnot. But this thing had a little bit more to it, the pats on the back that he was getting, more of kind of what we heard from Peter today. Like, that was your best game. Well done. Huge bummer that we couldn't keep you in there because of how well he was playing. So, I thought he played well. You know, Barat played well. Just overall defensively. And you heard from PV after the game on our broadcast that he commended the guys for executing the game plan that they had for the game really well. And we heard from Ilya today out here at Pinnacle in the press conferences the same exact thing. He said the coaches had this game plan, and we thought that we pretty much nailed it down. Just a bummer for them that they couldn't take that lead that they had gotten and hold on for 3 points and be the first team to beat Houston at Houston this year.
Still think it's a big point for this team with a five-game road trip, possibly six. I guess it's even within the realm of possibility if they get a second U.S. Open Cup game that they could have six road games in the month of June. To start it off with a good performance like that and get a result out of it is the right way to start things and should be a confidence booster as well. All right, we're going to take a break. We've got a busy show for you again today. Coming up next, Johan Quaze, who had the big goal in that game. What a chip of the goalkeeper that one was against the Houston Dynamo. He's going to join us next. And also we're going to talk with Sporting Kansas City goalkeeper, keepers coach Alec Dufty, and get to know his background a little bit and talk Sporting Kansas City goalkeepers as well. Two conversations you're going to want to hear. And then, of course, we'll preview the match on Friday against Toronto FC and also talk about some big activities in the month of June coming up. Even if the team's out of town, we've got all kinds of activities for you here in Kansas City in June as well. That's all straight ahead right here on the Sporting Kansas City Show. The Sporting Kansas City Show continues right here on your home for SKC Soccer, Sports Radio 810 WHB. And, of course, we appreciate you listening anytime, anywhere on the podcast at 810WHB.com, on the 810WHB app. If you don't have that, make sure you download it to your phone or whatever device you might use. And, of course, on Spotify, iTunes, and Ask Alexa. And she can play the Sporting Kansas City Show for you as well. Well, I wish it was easy as just asking Johan for a goal. It seemed like it was that easy on the weekend when Johan Quaze came up with the fantastic chip of the keeper against Houston, which allowed Sporting Kansas City to come away with a 1-1 draw on the road, get a big point away from home as well. And Johan joins us on the show now. Johan, how are you, man?
I'm good. How are you?
We're good, and I'll go ahead and let our listeners know that while we are taping this at Pinnacle, we, in the background, have the United States U-20s against the France U-20s, and USA took a 1-0 lead. Right now, as we're taping this, France has jumped in front with a 2-1 lead with a goal in the second half. Do you get excited to watch these types of games? This is the U-20s playing right now. Is this on your radar at all?
Yeah, I know some players from the French team, like the defender, the number four, Camara. He's playing for a good team in France, Marseille, and the number 10, Jabi, from PSG. So I think so now is a good game. And, USA, if they have what time is it now? Yeah, 69, so they have 20 minutes to maybe come back, so we'll see.
Yeah, it's a really good young French side, and they're looking to continue on. What about the Women's World Cup? Do you have any sense of are people excited back in France this summer for hosting that?
Yeah, everybody is very excited because for sure is the World Cup is in France, and the first team is really good. But they know already USA, they have a good team, Germany, so it's going to be a nice competition for everybody. I think so, yeah.
You know, a good job, Carter, because that gives us an opportunity to plug the watch parties down at the Power and Light District. for the United States. Every time the U.S. Women's National Team plays, we're going to be having watch parties in the Power and Light District. Should be a lot of people there. The last few times we've done that, it's been a lot of fun. So should come on down, man.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. I'm just leaving at 2 lights, so it's going to be really close, and I'm going to watch the game for sure, yeah.
There you go. And then, of course, your homeland won the World Cup just this last summer on the men's side as well. How involved were you? Did you get really emotional watching it? What was it like watching all that?
I remember I was on the plane, I think so. We came back from the game against New York or something. And so I saw the result after after we came back to KC. So I was like a little bit sad because I came watching the game. But yeah, I was really happy. Everybody was like so happy in France, and all my friends were like crazy on the street. And so I missed the party. But yeah, everybody was like super excited to win the World Cup.
Okay, now I'm trying to remember, what would you have been, about 5 years old when they won the World Cup in France in 1998?
Yeah, 1998, yeah.
Do you remember it at all?
Just a little bit. I was young, yeah. I was like maybe 5 or 6 years old, but I remember I was on the street with my family too, so yeah, it was a really happy moment for everybody too. And yeah, you just want to enjoy, you know, because that's your country, so you're proud for that. And yeah, you just want to enjoy with your family and friends.
Why is France so good at soccer? I mean, there's a lot of countries that love the sport.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
But France seems to have a lot of success.
Yeah, I mean, you have so many good clubs in France, and you have so many, like, young talents, like you can see in the World Cup too. And it's really difficult to be, like, professional in France. Because now when you see Mbappe, he's only 20 years old, so you say, well, wow, you know, it's crazy. Because I remember when I was 20, I was like just starting my career, so it's crazy now the evolution. And yeah, I mean, in USA, soccer is not maybe the first sport, but now everybody, like my friend in France, they know about MLS. Everybody knows MLS now, so, and I heard... And you know, the Channel Bein Sport in France, they just bought the MLS team, the MLS league, so you can watch now the game too in France. So it's good for everybody to watching now.
That's very cool. That's good news. Getting on the end. Is soccer by far and away, as USA just level things up while we're here live? Is soccer far and away the most popular sport in France? What else is up there? Rugby? What else?
Everybody loves tennis too. But yeah, like in Europe, it's really soccer. But like now in Europe, you say football, not soccer. It's different, you know. But the first sport is like soccer in France. Yeah.
So. I visited France in 1998, about 3 months before the World Cup. I was a senior in college, and I was there for 1 week in Paris. And one of my biggest memories was that almost everywhere I walked, if there were children outside, they were playing soccer in the streets, in parking lots, wherever.
Yeah.
Is that how you grew up playing the game?
I started the soccer like in a futsal, you know, inside. Mm-hmm. So like for 2 or 3 years. And yeah, everybody like to play outside. When you finish the school, you go with your friends who play soccer for like 1-2 hours until your mom calling you to go eat, you know.
Yeah.
So it's really like everybody like to play together, you know. Even if you like old or young, you know. I remember when I was young, I was like the best of my friend, you know, and like my old friend, every time they were like calling me, oh, come play with us, blah blah blah. So yeah. It was a good moment with my friends, and everybody liked to play soccer in France.
You have, you can tell, it's easy to tell when we watch you that you like to take people on. When you get the ball, you feel confident with your ability to run at people, to use your skills. Is that something you learned playing on the streets with your friends? How did you develop that skill?
Yeah, it was on the street, but when I was in France, my club, Metz, every Monday, I remember with my ex-trainer, each categories, I have to train with the bad foot. That's why I can use like my right foot, like my left foot.
Yeah.
And but most of my skills come from the street. Yeah.
Was Metz the club you grew up cheering for?
Yeah. Okay. I grew up. Yeah.
Is that the local club from where you're from then?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
At what point did you realize that you could become a professional soccer player? You mentioned that everybody loved it and your friends told you you were the best player, but when did you realize, I think I can actually make a living at this? And
yeah.
What did your family think of that?
I remember I left my family when I was like 11 years old. So in France, you start like with the, just the, before the formation, you have like pre-formation. So you go to like the school 8 until 3 p.m. After that, someone's coming to the school to the training. After the training, you go to study with some teacher too. And after that, you have to like grow up by yourself, you know. So like every Monday, I was taking the train by myself. I was like just 11 years old, you know. Mm-hmm. So you grow up like maybe faster than the other kids, you know.
It's funny because we talk a lot about Gianluca Busio here. Mm. He left his family at 14, 15 years old.
Yeah.
And for us in America, that seems incredibly young
to
do it, but it's fairly common, right? If you're in France, that's just the decision that you make if you get to identify as a player.
I was sure, like, when I saw my quality when I was young and I was like, okay, I want to try to be, like, professional for sure. I didn't know. But I'm saying, like, okay, maybe it's my opportunity, it's my chance, so I have to try it, you know.
Well, we haven't chatted with you for a little bit. Last time we talked, it was kind of when you had come into Kansas City. How are you finding the city now that you've been here for a good while?
Yeah, now I like the city, honestly. I have so many friends, like, friends, like, I have, different friends, but, yeah, I know everybody now in KC, so I know every good place, so, yeah, I feel like home now here.
You've met a lot of French people that live in Kansas City now?
Yeah, I know. I know one family, they come in the game, too, so now you have so many guys in the second team's World Park Rangers, too, so I was like, wow, it's crazy, you know, but... Yeah, but most of my friends are, like, from America now, so...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I remember we asked you if you found any good French restaurants last year. Had you found any new ones? Do you have any favorites now that you've been around for a little longer?
I've been to the Café des Amis, you know. This one is pretty good, too. But my favorite is still Le Fou Frog.
Sure.
This one is the best.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah. We're visiting with Johan Croizet. I mentioned at the start of this interview the goal that you scored against Houston. Take us back through that goal, maybe what you remember seeing when Elie played you the ball and what you remember thinking as that play unfolded.
I mean, it was like a difficult game for us, for the team, because especially for me on my side, because my left back was like running every time, you know, so I was like almost playing defender. So the first half was like a little bit difficult for me, but after that, so... My defender was like just staying in the defense, so I say to Willy, Benny and Felipe, when you see me like running behind him, you have to play. So Willy just played perfect ball, and I just like, take my chance, and I just saw the goal coming really fast for me, so I was like chipping behind him, and it was a goal, so it was like a beautiful goal for the team. And just the bad point is like we just conceded the goal after that, so I think so we just lost 2 points over there.
So what's it like playing in the heat in Houston in the summer? And did you experience much heat like that before coming over to the U.S.?
It was super hot last game. But, I mean, in KC last summer was the same. So now,
sure.
I mean, you know how you have to prepare this game, you know. So, I mean, just the 15, 20 minutes, it was difficult. But after, your body is okay for that.
You mentioned how difficult it is if you're playing on the wing and the other team's left back is bombing up the field all the time.
Peter told me to like to defend, to help Nico Hassler, you know. So I did my job like well. So sometimes you have to for the team, you know. Like I think so I'm the only player to play like heavy position like every game. So you know I have to accept that and I have to help my team. Especially now because we have so many players injured, you know. So maybe next game I'm going to play on striker. I don't know, we'll see, but I'm ready to play.
So we have seen you up top at striker a few times this year as well. And I know that a couple of games ago you had two assists and Peter really appreciated the job you played when you were playing in that number nine position. Out of all the positions, how do you like playing up there? Is that one of your favorites?
Yeah, I mean, because for sure you stay on the top, you know, you have so many actions to score the goal, so I bet you have to help your teammates, like you have to make the run behind the defense. I like that, you know. So yeah, like I said, I never know where I'm gonna play, you know, because maybe next game I can play on the left back, or like I played, I think so, two or three games on the road on the left back too. So I don't know, honestly, but yeah, my favorite position is for sure is on the top or on the wing side, yeah.
So you talked about it. You guys are missing some players, not only through injury, but now a few guys have gone to play for internationals.
Yeah.
What's kind of the feeling like now as you're heading into another away game and you're kind of down a few players?
Yeah, I mean, now we just lost, like, so many good players, like Johnny. We need Johnny, like, every game, like Nemo too. So, but, you know, you have a really good team, so everybody is going on the same way, so that's the most important, you know.
Johan, it's been really fun to get to talk to you again, and look, you guys got a big point on the run. I know you feel like you should have gotten three, but it's something to build on, right, especially with these road games coming up, the way you guys played. If you play that way against Toronto again, you've got another good chance to get a result, don't you feel, on Friday night?
Yeah, for sure. We're going over there to win the game, so we have to prepare this game like really hard, and Peter and the staff, and it's gonna be like ready for this game. Yeah.
One real quick question: you watching the NBA finals at all? You NBA guy?
I'm not really NBA.
Not really.
But
okay.
I like it. Yeah. Too, so I know who is playing, so that's the most important, you know.
Yeah. That's the interesting part is that Toronto's got game four.
Yeah.
You guys are gonna be up there. Well, you're not a Tony Parker.
Yeah, I know Tony Parker. Yeah, for sure. Everybody knows him.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I have to point this out. Sorry, Johan, but, you know, the United States just picked up a third goal here while we're watching.
Goalkeeper
spilled it a little bit.
3-2.
3-2 already?
Yeah.
No way.
Just while we've been talking to you, the USA. We got to keep you on for us. You're good luck
USA,
with two goals here. Hey, Johan, thank you very much for the time. Congratulations on the big goal.
Thank you.
And good luck on Friday.
Thank you. Thank you, guys.
All right, that is Johan Quazay. We will take a break. We're going to talk with Alec Dufty, the goalkeeper's coach for Sporting Kansas City, as we continue with the Sporting Kansas City Show right after this. The Sporting Kansas City Show continues on your home for SKC Soccer, Sports Radio 810 WHB, and, of course, on the podcast. You can ask Alexa to play the podcast for you. You can listen to it at 810WHB.com, on the 810WHB app, Spotify, iTunes, wherever you get your podcasts, and we'll do some trivia again this week, maybe for some Gold Cup tickets. That's what we did last week. We'll do it again as we got the Gold Cup coming up in late June here at Children's Mercy Park. We just had a chance to catch up with Johan Quazay. Good stuff from the Frenchman who scored the big goal for Sporting Kansas City this past weekend. Now we're going to give you another one of those peeks behind the curtain a little bit. Let you see what goes on behind the scenes here at we're at Pinnacle where we're taping this right now, and with Sporting Kansas City with the goalkeeper's coach for SKC, Alec Dufty, joins us. Alec, how are you, man?
I'm great. How are you guys doing?
Doing awesome. Before we get into current stuff with the team and all that, what we've been doing this year with the show is bringing in different people from the organization and maybe letting the fans get to know them a little bit and also find out what they do, you know, on a daily basis, because the average fan might say, okay, a goalkeeper's coach, what's his day like? In a Cliff Notes version, what would you tell the fans? What is a day like for Alec Dufty here at Pinnacle?
Kicking a lot of soccer balls. I would say in the morning, show up, check the session again for the day to make sure everything's good, and then go out to the field with the guys, go through our training routine, come in, cut up video from the training session, go through it with the guys afterwards, and spend the rest of my day working on video of upcoming opponents and things like that. So a lot of video for sure.
You guys are out earlier than the other guys as well. What's that like being out there early, and then, you know, having Tim and Adrian for the most part coming out? What's that like in your day?
Yeah, so typical day, we're usually out 30 minutes before the team. And then with all the guys really, but particularly Adrian and Eric, we have these development plans that we have put together for them. So after training, I'll stay out for probably another 30 to 40 minutes with those guys to work on those development plans. Just kind of focus on weaknesses that they have in their game, and it gives me individual time with both of them to work on those things.
So when you say you kick a lot of soccer balls, when I watch practice, you're not joking. I mean, you work on, it seems like I'll look over there and you're working on crosses for a long time and you're serving them all in. Do you get worn out? I mean, does your leg get tired? That sounds like a stupid thing to say, but I don't know how many hundred balls you're kicking or whatever every day.
I would say at least 100 every day,
yeah.
Probably more like two.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I definitely get tired. I just try to stretch a lot and keep lifting weights to try to stay strong, but it definitely wears you out by the end of the week.
I mean, you have a strong leg as a result, though, right? Like, I gotta imagine you can you can kick the ball a long way right now if you wanted to.
I don't know about distance, but I can hit it hard.
This may get thwack. I was going to ask you, who you think has the hardest shot on the team?
I don't know. I would say probably Kellen hits a pretty hard ball.
Okay.
And Croizet does, too, when he connects with it. Probably one of those two guys.
And then the follow-up is, do you think they could touch the MPH you're putting out?
No chance.
So, you know, it's interesting to hear you say that, though, because Kellen Rowe has got to be the smallest guy on the team.
Yeah.
I mean, if you told me Quaze, I think I'd believe it because he's got these, like, tree trunks for legs. He looks like a powerful guy, but it isn't always the size of the guy, right? Like, it's interesting.
Yeah, it's all about technique.
Yeah.
That's probably why I don't blow my leg out, because I feel like I don't have to try to hit it too hard. I just hit so many that I don't want to say I've perfected it, because it's not that, but I'm pretty close, I would think. The 10,000 hour rule.
Yeah, yeah, you're there. We're visiting with Alec Dufty, the goalkeeper's coach for Sporting Kansas City. One of the things I wanted to ask you about, too, though, is that with Sporting Kansas City's style of play and the system that they play, the ability for the goalkeepers to be more than just shot stoppers, to be guys that can really be the initiate the build up and play and be able to play out of the back when under pressure. I see you spending a lot of time working on, for example, those diagonal balls that Tim Melia will drop on to Seth Sinovic. What is that, about a good 35 yards away, maybe more? And I think that sometimes, if you're watching the game as a fan, that looks like an easy play because they make it look easy. But how many times we watch the goalkeepers for other teams come in here, and when they're under pressure, that ball goes four rows into the stands, right?
Yeah. There's definitely pressures to playing on this team as far as being able to play out of the back and not get too uncomfortable under pressure and being able to find opportunities to play guys. Because, like you said, there's teams where they tell their goalkeepers, guys coming at you, just get it as far as you can up the field.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, that's definitely something we spend a lot of time on. And I think in general, if you look at goalkeepers anyway, especially on our team, if you broke down the amount of time they spend doing certain things, playing with their feet would be probably 90% of the time.
Wow.
5% would be shot stopping on a given day.
Yeah.
I would say majority of their touches are with their feet. And then there's the occasional cross or shot that they have to stop. So it wouldn't make sense if we did all shot stopping and nothing with their feet. So we try to focus on that a fair amount.
So one other thing we've been doing, and we haven't really gotten a chance to do this with you, is guys' backgrounds and maybe your story. For those that don't know it, just kind of, can you take us through maybe growing up, why did you get into soccer, and then going through college, playing in college, and then a pro career as well?
Yeah, so growing up, my dad used to play in the old NASL for the Earthquakes, actually. So he never forced it on me, but it was just kind of something I grew up with. He would always be out, like, juggling a ball and doing things like that. He coached a couple of teams in the area, and I would always be at practice with them and watching. So I just really grew up with it. I played baseball and basketball as well, but soccer was always kind of my passion. So played all three sports throughout high school, kind of junior year of high school. I was actually a field player, and then I switched to goalkeeper full-time at that point, so it was pretty late. And I played club for Mike Jacobs, who used to work here.
Yeah.
He's in Nashville now. So I was going to App State University. I went there for one semester and decided I was going to transfer. and I was trying to find the right school. And at the same time, Mike Jacobs, he was at Duke University, and he left to go coach at Evansville. So it kind of matched up, and he knew me from club, so I went to Evansville with him and spent the next couple years of college there. I was lucky enough to do well and went to the Red Bulls after that. Only played in one MLS game, but did okay. Got released from the team and spent the rest of the year as a pool goalkeeper with Columbus. So I was back up to Hesmer and Grunenbaum there the rest of that year. And then went down to the USL, spent a year there trying to get some games. So I played for St. Louis. They were only in existence. It was AC St. Louis at the time. They were only in existence for 1 year. So that year I was there and got called up to Chicago at the end of that year and spent two or three seasons there. When my time was done there, I just kind of decided I was ready for something else. So I actually went back to, I was going to PT school. And I was coaching at UIC at the same time and working in a clinic at nights. So it was long days. But in my experiences working in clinics and, you know, having old people squeeze balls to strengthen their hands and stuff, I was like, this isn't for me. So I kind of switched and stuck with the coaching. I worked out, went from UIC to Florida Gulf Coast University for 2 years, and then connection with John Conway, who I played with in New York and Chicago. He was a goalkeeper coach up in Toronto, and he brought me on there to coach with their academy and B team, and was there for a year, and an opportunity opened up here, so I jumped at it and been here ever since. So,
listening to your description of your experience with physical therapy, if my wife listens to this podcast, she's going to be laughing. She's a physical therapist, and she treats geriatric patients now too. So that's you just described what her life is all about at this point.
And, some people love it, you know. It just wasn't for me at the time.
Yeah, it's well, you know, she and not to make it about her, but she loved the sports aspect of it. You know, and that's what she did until we had kids, was, you know, sports rehab type things. And obviously it's all in the same kind of realm of how the human body works, how you train the human body to recover from injury, avoid injury, and those types of things. And you guys are involved in that on a daily basis here. I mean, that's what it seems like. That's what this building's kind of the name of the game, right? Is getting guys better, keeping them ready to play, all that.
100%. You have everything at your disposal here. I mean, the amount of recovery thing, modalities that we have here that the guys can use, and different rooms for different things, recovery and oxygen chambers. I mean, it's crazy. But it's been great trying to take advantage of it to keep the guys healthy, and it's been working so far with the goalkeepers.
So you played three sports in high school until you decided to focus on soccer. I was just having a conversation with some parents the other day about, they were lamenting the fact that it seems in today's world, coaches even, it, not just the kids feel like they're under pressure to pick and specialize right away. Do you think it's still possible for a kid to do what you did back then, or is the world changed too much in that regard?
I don't know that it's possible up until the age that I did it, but it's actually something that me, Ross, and Gavin have talked about a lot with our young goalkeepers. I think it's important that they do play other sports to develop different skills, because what you do in basketball is totally different than what you do in soccer, and what you do in baseball is totally different than both of those. And I think it develops you more as an athlete to go through those things. So we're trying to figure out ways to let the kids play other sports and be a part of the academy at the same time. I think it's going to get harder and harder for kids to do that into the high school ages, just because of the demands of being a part of an academy now and things like that. It's a huge time commitment. I mean, they're almost on a similar schedule to a professional now, the amount of days that they train and the length of their season. But I do think, specifically for goalkeepers, I think it's really important to be involved in other sports that require hand-eye coordination and different movements and things like that.
Do you think there's a relationship between why the U.S. has had such a long history of good goalkeepers, maybe where the field players haven't stood out internationally as much, but the likes of Casey Keller and Tim Howard, those type of guys, do you maybe see a connection there?
I've always thought that, and I haven't had a chance to really talk to any of those guys, Casey Keller, Brad Friedel, about their backgrounds in playing other sports.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we went through a time where the U.S. was known for producing goalkeepers like that. And I don't want to say it's fallen off because you still have Zach Steffen and guys like that who are going overseas and hopefully do really well. But it'll be interesting to see what happens as we've progressed away from having these multi-sport athletes and just in general really good athletes over to now we just have goalkeepers. I think it's important that we try to find a mix, though, because I do think kind of call it the golden era of goalkeeping in the U.S. A lot of those guys probably grew up playing other sports because soccer wasn't that big and you didn't have training every day and you weren't part of academies. So it's interesting, though. Yeah.
So you said you were a position player, you were a field player before you made the switch halfway through your high school career. I'm picturing a target forward here, or a center back. Somebody strong in the air. What am I looking at here?
Goal scorer, of course. Yeah. I mean, that's what we're talking about. Shooting.
That's where the shot comes from.
Scoring goals.
Yeah. So when to go back to your day here, you talked a lot about the video preparation you do, and I know being around this staff and coaches in general, maybe the average person doesn't understand the hours that go into getting ready before the team even gets here or after they're done with training and all the work you do. But I will say that Tim, every time Carter talks to Tim after a game, if he's made a big penalty save or something, he's quick to give credit to you and Ash Wallace for people that prepare him. If people are watching a game and they see the other day, Tim makes a great play on Zlatan when he had a one-on-one. Mm-hmm. Tim's so great in those situations. He's so great in penalties. How much of that is the instincts of Tim in that moment? How much of that is he's armed with preparation and he knows what the tendencies are of a player going into a moment like that?
I think it's all Tim, to be honest. I mean, I do what I can to prepare him, but even if you know the tendencies of a guy, you can't cheat in a situation. I couldn't have told him if Zlatan takes a heavy touch, then run out and make that play. You know, he was watching him. He saw the ball come off his foot a little farther than it probably should have, and he's so explosive that he just made the movement to block him in that situation. I can't teach that. We can talk about Zlatan and his tendencies, and we can try to train those things, but when it comes to game time, I mean, that's all Tim. So I try to do my part, but I certainly won't take any of the credit for that.
What's your relationship like with Tim? You guys are pretty much the same age, right? And I mean, you've got a pool goalkeeper background kind of like him as well. What's your guys' relationship like?
It's been really good. He's actually a year older than me.
Carter.
I'm not that old. No, we have a great relationship. Like I said, when I first came on board, I mean, my main goal was Tim has had more of a career than I ever had, right? But I just wanted to prove through doing video for him and talking to him and all that stuff that I knew the game a little bit and that I was willing to do whatever I could to help him. And I think at the end of the day, most goalkeepers and players in general, that's really all they want is to know that you're behind them and you're going to push them to be better. So from that standpoint, I mean, we've had a great relationship, great working relationship.
We were just talking about USA goalkeepers. Having worked with Tim, do you feel like he's maybe unlucky to not have been considered over the past couple of years?
I would say, yeah. I think it's tough because he also has kind of come into his own at a time when the U.S. is in a bit of transition.
Yeah.
So while I think he's one of the better guys in the league, probably top three in my opinion, we're also at a time when the U.S. is trying to transition and get some of our younger generation playing, and I completely understand that, and I know he does too. It's not really something that we've ever talked about because Tim's motivations lie purely in sporting, you know. I know that he would probably love a call-up and to be a part of a camp, but I know it's not something that he's focused on either. But I do think that he could be a part of that group easily.
Yeah, timing sometimes is everything, and it just seems like the timing was just off there for Tim in that regard. Real quick before we let you go, we know we got a lockdown, one of the best goalkeepers in the league, and Tim, like we've been talking about, but you're developing young guys as well. You've got Eric Dickin and Adrian's and Dejas, and you've brought in some young guys have come into the academy as well. How involved do you get with the development of the younger goalkeepers in this system as well? You mentioned Gavin, and I know those guys are obviously involved, but how involved do you get in that aspect of things?
To be honest, I would say me, Gavin, and Ross, probably 90% of our conversations are around the academy. So obviously I let them do their jobs. I think they're amazing, but I trying to build our program for the future. I try to stay as involved as I can. I go down to Swope as often as I can to watch those guys. I help them work on those development plans we talked about that Adrian and Eric have. Same thing with John Pulskamp and Brooks Thompson and Max Trejo, who will all play for Swope this year at some point. So I try to stay very involved, and we try to get those guys minutes with Swope and get them professional experience. And I think it's awesome that already this season we've had a 17 or 16 and 18-year-old play in professional games for us. I think it's just a sign of the future. And I think if you ask Tim and Adrian, those guys, what they think when those young guys come out to train with us, it's impressive where they are at this stage of their career as 16-year-olds.
Yeah. Sporting is in Toronto, and it's a place where you spent a year. You got any looking forward to that trip back? You got any haunts that you're gonna hit up?
I don't know. I lived in a different part of the city, but there's a couple of restaurants that I love that are chains within the city. It's a great place in general. I love Toronto, my time there, but I just felt I was ready for a change. But yeah, I'm super excited to go back and be in the city again.
What are the chains? Do you mind?
Well, one is called Fresh. I'm vegan. I don't like to talk about it very often, but so one's called Fresh. There's a Thai restaurant called Pai. Those were my two favorite places when I lived there.
Okay.
Yeah.
And will you test out Jurassic Park at all? The big celebration zone for the Raptors after the sporting game is over on Friday night.
I'll probably stay away from that.
Are you an NBA fan at all? Have you been watching the finals?
No. I don't watch any of the regular season. When the finals are on, I'll probably watch it as it gets later into it. The regular season doesn't excite me. When we lived in Toronto, though, we went to a couple Raptors games because we were there, and it was cool. Yeah. But I spend so much time doing video and stuff. My wife will tell you we're a one-sport household, so there's too much time around soccer to be worrying about other sports.
Sure.
Carter, you're 0-for-2, buddy. Carter's a big NBA fan. He's excited, but Johan and Alec both, they're too focused on soccer to get into this NBA Finals on Friday.
Ilya was about it this morning. He's rooting for Marc Gasol because he's Catalan.
There you go
with that.
Well, hey, Alec, it's really great getting to know you a little bit more, giving us some background. We really appreciate it, and thanks for everything you did today.
No, of course. Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
All right, that's Alec Duffy. We'll be back to wrap things up on this edition of the Sporting KC Show right after this. Back to wrap things up on the Sporting Kansas City Show with Carter Augustine, Nate Bucati here. And before we preview this Toronto game quickly, I want to run down some activities coming your way in the month of June. First of all, please be sure to schedule to join us on the FIFA Women's World Cup watch parties, which start next week. That's right, ladies and gentlemen, the World Cup is here. It's in France, but it's here. I mean, from a timing standpoint, it is right around the corner. The United States women's national team will take on Thailand on Tuesday of next week. So, I mean,
that's coming up.
Yeah, it's a week from today. If you're listening to this on the day we're recording the podcast, we're gonna have to figure out how we're gonna plan the podcast and show and everything next week with the show down. Maybe we'll do it from down at
down
the
from P&L.
P&L. It's gonna be awesome, and those parties are great fun. I have ordered a new Patriotic USA Bald Eagle t-shirt to unveil on stage.
Nice.
I had to throw the old one away because it was bad luck. Since the men didn't qualify when I was wearing that one. That one went into the trash can immediately that night. That might have been an emotional decision on my part.
Sure.
But anyways, a new one unveiling next week. And then we're going to have them for all three of the group stage games, and then as far as the women make it. So that'll be fun. Also, June 26th, don't forget, Gold Cup. Buy your tickets. USA versus Panama, Trinidad and Tobago against Guyana before that. So you get a doubleheader. My son's youth soccer team, we have bought our tickets. We're going to be out in full voice cheering on the United States men's national team. But let's keep doing everything we can to show the world that we deserve the World Cup coming here in 7 years. And I think every time we show up for these types of things, that makes a difference. And that also leads me to this Friday, First Fridays. What a great time First Fridays always are down in the Crossroads, 2020 Baltimore. That's where we'll have our First Friday watch party for Sporting Kansas City against Toronto FC. Go to sportingkc.com, get all the details of all of those events coming up, and get signed up for all of them if you need to, and we want to see you down there. So that leads me to this, Carter. You're going to be in Toronto while we're getting ready for this game, Sporting KC and Toronto FC, 6 o'clock, time change. They moved it up because they're going to make accommodations for that NBA final, and our game will be on Fox Sports Kansas City Plus and on our sister station on the radio, ESPN Kansas City 94.5 FM. What do you think of this Toronto matchup? A team that's been struggling a little bit here of late themselves.
They're shaky, yeah. They're on shaky ground. And hearing from Sporting KC, especially today, this seems like a game that they're really eyeing as one in this road trip, where they're gonna think that they've got this these 3 points. You've got a bunch of players missing for Sporting, but you got a bunch missing for Toronto as well, and it's a team that started the season pretty well, and I thought Pozuelo came in and hit the ground running. But as you just mentioned, they've been pretty poor recently, and they've been conceding a lot of goals as well. They're very slow on the back line, so you wonder what Sporting will be able to do. I think they'll be looking at that back line especially and try maybe exploit them and get in behind.
Well, and they have tried to make an adjustment or an addition to their team. They have made an addition to the team, and Omar Gonzalez was announced this week, but won't be with them for this because he'll be with the U.S. men's national team.
Yeah, and he won't be able to play with them until the transfer window opens up as well. So he's missing the game twice, I think, on Friday.
There you go. But you did mention Alejandro Pozuelo. He's played 11 games. He scored 5 goals and 6 assists already for Toronto FC. Now, it has been 4 games since he's had a goal or an assist, so I don't know if teams are adjusting to him. Maybe it's just one of those runs. But he is certainly a guy that hit the league by storm right off the bat, and Sporting will have to be aware of him on Friday.
Yeah, what I've been seeing from a lot of Toronto fans and media is that teams have been doing a good job kind of starving his supply and starving his service, and he seems to be the guy that's really making this Toronto team tick, at least in the early stages of the season, right when he came in. And you have to think that he's going to be a big focus for this Sporting KC team. I'm wondering what the crowd's going to be like out there at BMO Field.
Well, you know, they've got their diehard fans, and those diehards will probably be there. But in terms of the rest of the city of Toronto, they're going to be focused on the NBA Finals. And I think you're right. It'll probably be one of the more poorly attended games of the year, and hopefully Sporting KC can take advantage of that as well. They have not been in great form at home either, but we shall see. An opportunity for Sporting to maybe get some points on the road on Friday night. Again, 6 o'clock for game time, 5:30 for broadcast time on television as well, and Carter will be on the sidelines for that one. That's going to do it for us on this edition of the Sporting Kansas City Show. Again, our thanks to Johan Quaze and Alec Dufty for joining us. Our thanks to you for listening or downloading the podcast as well, and we will see you next week on World Cup Watch Party Day down in the Power and Light District, right here on the Sporting Kansas City Show.